All right, here we are back again with another weekly helping of Mint Sauce Chronicles. We haven't done one of these for a while. I hope everyone's in good health and enjoying the servitude and lunacy that we're living through right at this moment in time. The format is easy. We try and release a minimum of 4 shows a month. Members get full podcasts plus download. Non-members get part one. All shows are released on Saturdays. Podcasts are always on sheepfarm.co.uk. And we always put part one on Podomatic. And they release them on Spotify, Amazon, Audible, Google Podcasts, Tapple, Spotify. I mentioned Spotify already, so maybe there's two Spotifys. Please subscribe to the website as well. It won't cost anything, so I'm not trying to get you to join up or anything like that. But the notifications for all new shows come via email. And obviously YouTube is going to be defunct soon, I reckon. I don't think we're going to be able to put the things on that we talk about on here anyway, for sure. So yeah, sign, it's very easy. Just go and put your email address in and that's it. And you get a reminder when there's a new show out, if you're interested in that. Thanks for all the comments and emails. The Sheep Farm shop, thanks for all your orders on that. Delivery times are about 10 days. We do put new designs on from time to time. For the first hour of this show, we've got Nick Collestrom back again to talk about Guy Fawkes. And in the second hour, me and Chris do a normal chinwag for about an hour, just over an hour, and we talk about things that have been going on in our lives and the world of Nonsense Land. With me tonight, as usual, is our Chris.
Good evening.
How are we doing?
Not bad. All right.
Yeah.
Bit weary. We're working this morning.
Well, yeah. You've been working yesterday. You've been putting some hours in recently, haven't you?
Two guys walked out, so I get called to work extra, which is
like
fine.
Like red air.
Yeah. I like
without
it.
The air.
Mercenary
without
chef.
The air.
I'm a mercenary chef. mercenary without the air.
More red. Yeah.
Red three strands. Free care. I turned
red
up to work.
Three strands, you'd be called.
I sent you that picture. I turned up to work the other day, last week, I think it was. And I get there at 7. And I park my bike in exactly the same spot every day. And there was a leaflet on the bench right next to where I park my bike of a smiley face.
Right.
Like an A5 leaflet. It was for a church. And it said, it's not that weird, but it is a bit weird. Just because we talk about how much you see in these smiley faces. And it was just a leaflet, like for a church, saying 4 ways to make you smile and smiley face on the cover.
Well, wife got a delivery this week. She was doing a return. The box were on table and it had a green smiley face on the box. And I was sat there having a cup of tea, watching something. And I thought, and you know, when you catch something out of the corner of your eye,
I think just there with a smiley face. We've talked about it so much, you think they're driving us nuts.
Yeah, they're just following us around. Smiley faces. Yeah. So I mean, last few weeks we haven't done one of these. We're counting up. It's about 4 weeks. We did do a bit on Clive DeCarles, but I miss doing these. To be honest with you, I like doing the deep dives. That's my favourite, if being blunt, and I like doing these as well. In fact, when we set up, that's what we said we want it to be like. The phone just calls
like,
that we have.
I like chatting shit.
Yeah, yeah. chatting shit and drinking.
In case you hadn't noticed.
Yeah. I do enjoy the guests, you know, Matt Lamman, Matt Sergio. We've got one coming up at some point with Mark Devlin.
Never had a bad one. I've always enjoyed them.
Yeah, I've enjoyed every single one of them.
Yeah.
But I set up because of the research. That's why it got going. But also the chats that we have as well. So I suppose it gets stuff off our chest. And talking about that, we've got the live event coming up, haven't we? On the 9th of the 12th, 2023, which is actually, I'm quite shocked, it sold out pretty quick. And
sold out a week after we mentioned it on here.
Mm.
And it had already started selling from me posting it on Instagram.
Yeah. I'm still surprised people listen to us, to be blunt, but or as I normally say, I'm still surprised people listen to me in this knobhead. But yeah, it's going to be at Jonathan's in Honley, Jonathan Halstead's in Honley, and in Honley, his actual place is just outside Honley. On his address, it says Honley Home Firth, but it's not in Home Firth. People have been saying, "Is there anywhere to stay in Home Firth?" There is a few places to stay in Home Firth, but it's a couple of miles out of Home Firth is Honley.
Mm. I stayed in a pub in Honley and it had outside. I forgot what it's called now.
Toilets.
I'll find out. We'll mention it again. But Where I stayed was quite nice. It was just a pub with some outhouses. Me and Missus stayed there. I think because
like chalet type things.
Like chalet, a lot of places doing that now, aren't they?
Yeah.
And that was quite nice. I'll get the name for next. We'll keep mentioning this next time because we're also going to do a little meetup at my mate Rick's pub, which is in Honley, and it's called Crafty. I'll mention this again because I ain't got the street address, but it's in the middle of Honley, and it's HD968A, and it's called Crafty.
And what time are you thinking of meeting up, Chris?
Between 4 and 5, do you think?
I don't know. You're doing it.
Right, all right.
This is your world, pub world.
Yeah, but between 4 and 5, we've got a Crafty, just so people can meet up. And I'll speak to Rick and I'll mention it on the next one. We can maybe get a room where everyone can meet up.
Right, okay.
He's even said he'll put a sheep farm beer on for us. Which basically means just sticking a sheep farm logo on a beer. Maybe <Right. laughs> just add to it. So it's just, if people are traveling, it just gives another few hours of meeting other people. And I'll be there. You'll probably be there. Oh, you won't be. I don't know. I'm looking at your face. I don't know what that's telling me. But if people have come from any kind of distance, it's just so it's not just two or three hours. It's a bit longer, and they'll meet like-minded people who when we're all into the same stuff. So that'd be quite nice, I think. Just the next few hours. Anyway, he opens at 1, but I'm going to think I'll get there between 4 and 5. I'm not going to put an exact time on it because I'm useless. And he's got an eatery next door that serves food as well.
Right.
It's my mate Rick, who I grew up with.
Yeah.
And his missus is an avid sheep farm listener. He isn't so much. I've mentioned him before, actually, but constantly gets annoyed that he has to listen to me. Haunting him.
How do you think I feel? Yeah. There he is, having a big slurp. Have you earned that today, Chris?
I've been up since 6.
So you've earned that today?
Yeah.
So if you're up since 6, you earn it.
Anywhere, no matter what.
Right. I was say, because if you didn't get up at 6, you'd still have one, wouldn't you? I've earned it today because
I had a lie in and I'm feeling a bit lively.
Yeah.
That's what us drunkards do. We've got an excuse for everything. Oh, it's raining. Can't be staying and have a glass of wine. Oh, it's sunny. Can't be going to the park and having a beer.
Just tripping back to the guests we've had on. I do get quite a few emails saying, oh, can you get this guest on? Can you get that guest on? Or even other people asking to come on and things like that, or asking us to go on their shows. You know, time, we just haven't got the time. Okay, so we're going to start part one now, and I hope you enjoy this conversation we have with Nick Colostrom. All right, welcome back to Sheep Farm, and tonight we've got a returning guest. With me, as usual, is our Chris, opening his bottle of wine.
Good evening.
What wine are we on tonight, or which piece are we on tonight, Chris?
A bottle of Governor.
Yeah. Bottle of Governor?
Governor's Treasures.
Yeah. With us tonight is Nick Colostrom, who's, it didn't seem 2 minutes since you were on last time, Nick.
Well, it's been a while. Yeah. This is November, you see. November. Dominic.
Yeah. Well, we're a bit late, actually, because we planned this last year at some point and then totally went over the date. And we planned it this year and we're over the date again. But anyway, it is November at least.
Yeah.
And we've had plenty of false flags coming up to this. So
we're
going to be discussing Guy Fawkes. The first known false flag event, I reckon.
Right, yeah.
You've got a book out about that, and what's it called, Nick?
That's right. It's called The Bard and the Gunpowder Plot on the 400th anniversary of the greatest literary hoax of all time, because 400 years ago, all the 36 plays of Shakespeare were published with the author disguised, you see.
Yeah.
So that's what part of the book's about. But I link it to people involved in the gunpowder plot. I feel there's similar actors in these two different events of the great literary cover-up of the works of Shakespeare, and then this fabricated terror event to ratify the new Stuart lineage of King James from Scotland.
Yeah. Well, when was the Great Fire of London, Nick? Was it around the similar sort of time?
No, that was half a century later.
Yeah, right.
That was... Think of it as the end of the Black Death with the Great Fire of London. Mm. And the new Merry Monarch, King Charles II, was there, basically 1666, Great Fire of London.
That's right, yeah. Devil's Year.
Well, yeah.
So another orchestrated attack on...
Well, we'll talk about that at some point if you've got a bit of information on the Great Fire of London.
Just quickly, fellas, I was in the British Library yesterday. I was in London, so I thought I'd pop in. And I was looking at the old books. And there was an old handwritten Bible. I forgot what it was, and I was going to write it down. And I didn't write it down. But it was like an old handwritten Bible from 1500 or something. And it
amazing.
Yeah, and it was describing the gunpowder plot in it.
Gosh.
What year was the gunpowder plot?
The gunpowder plot, 1605.
Right.
It was presented as an act of divine providence that the king miraculously discovered this fiendish plot just in time, and so it was then ordained that every year the clergy had to preach a sermon on November the 5th or around then about the divine providence which rescued Britain from this awful threat.
Because that book was it was like a Bible, but it was weird because it was hand drawn, beautiful. And it had an old description, almost like a cartoon.
Well, it's in the Book of Common Prayer.
Right, is that where it was?
The gunpowder plot, it was divine providence that we were delivered from it. And until recently, it became part of the Church of England stuff.
Right. That's where we're in there. when did we start actually celebrating Bonfire Night?
Well, it was right after Guy Fawkes, right after Guy Fawkes became proverbial villain. And right after 1605, you see.
So were people having bonfires with an effigy of Guy Fawkes on it? That sort of like I'll use the year after, but in the or has it become more prominent in later years? Were they doing it in Victorian times, etc.?
Oh, I think yes. I'm not sure how far back it goes. He's just the villain. I'm not sure quite how long that's been.
All I'm saying that for is that obviously when we were kids, and no doubt when you were a kid, Bonfire Night was quite a big night for the year, wasn't it? It was something that was ingrained in us like Christmas.
And Easter. Celebrating a narrow escape from the wicked Catholics, Catholic plot. It was...
Because
a big national event.
Yeah, and it sort of broke the year up. You had Easter, then you had Guy Fawkes in like late autumn, obviously, and then you had Christmas, and it was sort of like them three things were the big three things of the year, weren't they? Because when you start researching all this stuff and you realise a lot of it's nonsense, you don't really get involved in the real world anymore, do you? So.
Well, I think we've got a very important and interesting new angle on Guy Fawkes. I'm to suggest that we should develop a new interest in this November 5th date, and we've got to honour it as the beginning of the Straight From Hell theatre that is now being used to right through this 21st century, State Fabric and Terror. And Britain has a special expertise in creating these dreadful events in which an illusory enemy is mocked up and fabricated. In order to get people to hate the enemy, and normally in order to enable wars to be possible. And I'm suggesting that this fiendish art was round about the beginning of what's called what we think of as British intelligence services, now MI5, started off as the Cecils, very influential family or dynasty rather, and they advised Queen Elizabeth, and then afterwards the King James took them over. And why were they so important? They're so important because of this dreadful policy of persecuting Catholics, you see. Catholicism had been the religion of England for 1,000 years, and suddenly Henry VIII kind of seized all the goods and the monasteries and banned the Catholic practices, made him, the monarch was decreed to be the head of the church, and this was all terrible stuff for a traditional Catholics, a traditional religion of England. And so there were lots of discontent. And Catholics were dreadfully persecuted. Like if you had a crucifix on your mantelpiece, you know, the intelligence agencies, if they found that out, you'd be done for. Or rosary was even worse. So because of that, they needed this continual intelligence services. And the intelligence services soon got the knack of making up plots in order to undermine any person who was a bit too strong or independent. And I think we see that a lot, especially continuing today, of plots being brewed up that used to undermine any powerful Catholic dynasties in England. That, I'm sorry to say, is very much how the gunpowder plot came to be formulated. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can actually, when you don't even have to really look at any wars that started, to see that most wars that have started, including, I can't even call it a war, the Israeli-Palestine one, it's just a total wipeout, isn't it? of
yeah.
But the all of these things have started with the people that end up winning calling out the people that end up losing as the protagonists of
Well, especially this country. I mean, you think Russia earlier on, you remember Russia was the great big bad enemy. And then it stopped in 1990 at the end of the Cold War. We had Islamic terror for a while. Then 2017, we come back again. Russia is the big bad enemy. If you go back earlier, there were wars with France. France was the enemy. Go back earlier, it was Holland, the Netherlands were the enemy because they were a big rival with empire and trading. And go back earlier, and Catholics became the enemy with the wars against Spain. So we're always generating enemies, part of the strategy of British imperialism. this one, it was connected with the new king. See, King James V of Scotland, well, he'd been brought up as a Catholic.
He was King James I of England, wasn't he? King James V of Scotland, weren't he?
That's right, yeah. Had a Catholic mother, so he promised toleration. I mean, instead of all the dreadful persecution that went on in the Elizabethan era, that's why he was welcomed. And
did you know Tony Blair's lineage goes directly back to him?
Was it?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. His lineage goes directly back to King James. You can't make this shit up if you want it to, mate, honestly.
No, right. He was soon, after getting accepted as a new king, he was soon turned by British intelligence and persuaded, no, look, you don't really want to tolerate Catholics after all. You can get much more money by fining them and confiscating all their land and property and so forth. So that then continued. And what you get in 1605... you get some. Cecil is talking about a plot at the beginning of the year, and alleging that gunpowder is being assembled, and there's a bunch of Catholics who are probably planning to go abroad and fight some sort of war in Flanders. So that they would meet up in London, they get their special swords engraved and everything for this war, and. These were people who had been previously arrested. There had been a previous plot, Earl of Essex, who had been executed. It was alleged that he was treasonous, and he, in fact, was promising toleration and moderation. That's the England he wanted to live in, where Catholics weren't persecuted. And some of that group, who came to be called the Gunpowder Plotters, were in that Earl of Essex group. So, in other words, the government had a handle on it. As if the government could say to them, okay, we've arrested you once, but we'll let you off as long as you do what you tell us, right? And two of them, one was called Catesby, the other was Percy, were seen coming and going from the big government home of the Cecils, which was in London on the Strand. So it's as if they were what we now call moles or double agents, but they were claiming to be part of this gunpowder plot group. But Cecil had some sort of handle on them, okay? So you get I'm just describing roughly what happened. Is that right?
Yeah. We're just listening, mate.
Yeah. So you had a group of them not quite knowing what's going to happen. I mean, you get angry Catholics in pubs saying, oh, we can't bear this, we're going to do something about it. But actually doing something about it is a very, very different thing, isn't it? So the question is, what did they actually do? And they had to be made, a story had to be made about them. And it's not at all clear what exactly happened. Let's bear in mind, this whole thing didn't happen. It was a non-event, right? And then quickly, the main perpetrators get shot. The main alleged perpetrators get shot. Two of them, Catesby, they try to escape, and another fellow, Percy, a few days after the gunpowder plot, they try and surrender. They come out without any weapons, holding a crucifix, and they get shot. And the government has to get rid of those two, because partly because they were involved in setting up the whole story that they would go into Cecil's home late at night and be seen coming out late at night. So those two had to be got rid of. And that's something we always see in modern state fabricated terror, that the patsy, the person who's going to get the blame, has to be either killed off or put in jail forever.
Mm.
Okay? Mm. You're never allowed to hear their story, what they think happened.
7-7 sprung to mind when you were saying that bit there.
Well, do you know what sprung to mind when you... Yeah, 7-7 or even shooting of Abraham Lincoln with the... that sort of sprung... Because they had to get rid of the people who were involved in all that, didn't they? More or less instantly.
Reminded me of them lads in... Like in your book, Nick, in Canary Wharf, who just vanished.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they had to be shot before they could be blamed.
Yeah.
And so that happens. You get Catesby and Percy, their heads, get this, their heads are impaled upon the rails of Parliament House. I mean, they haven't been tried in any way. There's nothing they've done. They haven't been found guilty by anyone. They're just accused. And State Fabricated Terror, you have to say immediately who is to blame.
Well, so the case is always closed instantly, isn't it?
Yeah, case is always closed. So those two get shot, and Guy Fawkes, you don't really know what he thought he was doing. There are testimonies about him being a highly respected character, mainly Catholic, but he's brought up in his home for a while as Protestant. I don't think it's very clear that these people are died in and were Catholics. Guy Fawkes, and also he's involved in that war in Flanders, the Catholics involved in this war in Flanders on the continent. That's where he spent quite a bit of time. And he then gets quickly arrested, and then he's tortured, okay? Most dreadful torture on the rack for days. And that's how they get his confession.
Yeah, it sounds like Guantanamo.
Well, the confession is basically written out and he has to sign it. And you can see his wobbly handwriting after he's been tortured for a few days. And so they have a story that they want to put out. It comes from torture. And the Catholics are obviously sceptical, but the main narrative is put out immediately by the king. King's account, so Catholics, it's very dangerous unless you escape to France. It's very dangerous to say anything about what you think happened. Okay, the main beef the Catholics has got is that nobody sees any gunpowder, right? And there is no gunpowder. Now the story has, say, at least a couple of dozen barrels of gunpowder, right? If you remember that, there's supposed to be a huge cellar underneath the House of Lords, a huge cellar in which barrels of gunpowder are stored. And they're then supposed to be covered over with firewood. And then at midnight, between the 4th and 5th of November, Guy Fawkes is lurking around around with a box of matches, he's arrested. That is the story, okay? Now,
Well, if you ever see a picture of him, he's always sat on a drum of gunpowder, isn't it? Any drawing of Guy Fawkes is always sat on some kind of gunpowder barrel.
Yeah.
Surrounded by him.
Yeah. Now, they time the discovery of the gunpowder so it's just before Parliament is due to sit, which it does in the afternoon of the 5th. Okay? Now, you would expect... if it's discovered at midnight, you would expect either for the sitting in the House of Commons to be postponed or delayed that day, which didn't happen, or else you'd expect a big scene of barrels, the army getting out barrels of gunpowder.
Mm.
You'd expect to see a few dozen barrels of gunpowder being carried out, and you'd expect the amazed public to be gathered around seeing this extraordinary spectacle. So that doesn't happen at all. There's no witness to barrels of gunpowder either being brought in or being brought out. Okay?
Hmm.
So I think that's there is a later report which comes out, I think, in the 1970s in the Daily Telegraph, that there's some sort of record at the Office of Ordnance, which is where gunpowder stored, official gunpowder stored, saying that corn powder was received after November the 5th, corn powder. And that is basically dud gunpowder that wouldn't have exploded. Corn powder is gunpowder that's not mixed properly, so it won't go bang. Okay? Mm-hmm. So that was recorded as receiving a certain amount of corn powder after November the 5th. But mostly, people can't get any track or record of these barrels that are allegedly discovered. So it's as if the King's story made up that part of it.
Well, I mean, every single this was probably the daddy of all false flags, weren't it? This was the incarnation of But I mean, they finessed it a lot more now, aren't they? I mean, we were discussing before we came on the Boston bombing, et cetera, et cetera, and how some of them are like, this one was a plot; it didn't even happen.
So
this could be classed as sort of like pre-crime, couldn't it? Even if like pre-crime. Minority Report type, early Minority Report type arrest, torture, etc.
Mad though that they still taught it in schools right up to when we were kids. Are they that bothered about it anymore? Do you think because the Catholic thing doesn't really exist anymore?
Well, it doesn't. Catholic, but I think kids would really like history lesson if we could bring in this kind of thing.
It's got to be real history.
This one knows this is the world we live in, where this stuff does happen. And if it's four centuries ago, so you can safely talk about it. You've got, if you look at analysing fabricated terror, you've got the difference between what's called lie hop and my hop. Lie hop is let it happen on purpose, that the state knows about the fiendish plot, but allows it to go ahead and maybe stops it just right at the end, or catches the people afterwards. And my hope is make it happen on purpose, that the state brews up the entire event, okay? Mm. Now, the Lyhop event is culturally acceptable in Britain today. Mm. There's an authoress called Lady Anthony Fraser who wrote the sort of best-selling book about the gunpowder plot, and it has the government knowing that it's going to happen. It's got tabs on all these plotters, and it lets them go ahead because it wants the drama and it wants to give the King credit for rescuing the country just in time, okay?
Yeah. Well, it does, Robert Cecil, he was like a agent provocateur, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's a bit like the Dick Cheney of our time, you know? he's got enormous power. That was quite frightening, how much power those British intelligence agents got because of this, the reliance of the monarchy on foiling plots.
I'll bet that some of these agent provocateurs at that particular time, the early forerunners to the intelligence services, were probably backed by some kind of bankers who controlled the coinage or what have you.
I think so, yeah. I think it's regrettable that only the Lyhop position is now literally accepted in literary and polite circles, and we need to move a bit further that these plotters were actually hoodwinked. We can never know exactly what they thought they were doing. That is trouble. But you don't have real evidence that they wanted to blow up Parliament.
In fact, I'm just reading here that the Earl of Salisbury was the High Treasurer. He was actually in office. So Cecil was the Earl of Salisbury. And he was the...
He's called the Earl of Salisbury. Yeah, he got that title.
He was the High Treasurer at the time in office.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was in charge of the money.
Yeah, and he got terrific promotion. Normally happens when the security services create a terror event like this and then they claim credit for foiling it, they then get an increase in salary and they get congratulated by everyone. Okay? So that's the advantage. But the disadvantage, obviously, is that the state risks everything. If the people realise the state is actually behind it all, you know, the whole authority would disintegrate.
Well, I mean, the chances of that happening, because as we saw in 2020 when everyone was locked in UK HMP prison,
right.
The government the entity, the government, whoever it's controlled by, wouldn't allow it. They controlled the media, they controlled everything. It was like wartime.
Right, yeah.
I mean, we've been under that. I mean, you guys have been talking about this for a decade or more, you know.
Right. Well, if you imagine it, in Tudor times, what was published was totally controlled by the Lord Chancellor. You could not publish stuff without the permission. And likewise, plays that could be put on. Yeah. You know, a playwright, completely incorrect. The playwright had been arrested and possibly tortured or whatever. So there was terrific control by the royal state. So Cecil was immensely successful in this ruse.
The Cecil family were quite a prominent family themselves, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think today they still exist and connecting with British intelligence. Let me give another example of what happened. What's called the Montague Letter. This is the only bit of kind of physical evidence the state could come up with about the Gunpowder Plot, as an event where nothing ever happened. A letter was given to this fellow, Lord Montague, about 10 days before the event by somebody anonymous, warning that something awful was going to happen when Parliament met. Okay. They would receive a blow and they wouldn't know where it had come from and so on. And that letter, nowadays believed handwriting that Cecil himself wrote the list, but it was given by some sort of stranger who claimed to know Lord Montague and whatever. So days go by, and then Montague gives the letter to Cecil, and then days go by, and then Cecil shows it to the king. And that's only on the 4th of November. So you've got about a week where nobody does anything. And then the king sees it the evening before, and he says, "Oh, by God, do you know what? They're going to blow up Parliament." And so he's given credit as if this letter was very mysterious and it's shown to him. And he's then given credit for decoding it. And he then sends, allegedly, a bunch of people to have a look at inspect the cellar. And they go down and they're shocked to see this huge loads and loads of gunpowder. And that's around midnight, and that's about 2 o'clock in the morning of November 5th. So that's the story, and it's alleged that that letter was then shown round to everybody as proof or evidence of the plot. Okay, but it isn't really evidence at all, because it's not clear which of the plotters would have wanted to do that, or why anybody would want to risk their life by putting their name on such a letter. Sending such a letter. That looks very much like a part of a concocted case.
What I was going to say there, when you were talking about that, Nick, was the Japanese attack on Hawaii that they got supposedly in writing from British intelligence, pre-warning them that there was going to be an attack.
Right.
That's handy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, Pearl Harbor, yeah.
Pearl Harbor, yeah. Yeah, they were pressured into doing that. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it must have been so easy to cover stuff up in them days.
Yeah, that was the pretext whereby America got itself into the war, you see.
But I just wrote several things down there the connection was going a bit iffy. The Boer War, Zulu War, World War One, Pearl Harbor, and World War Two with Poland and all the other stuff. Korea, the Gulf of Tonkin incident.
Goodness gracious.
The first Gulf War, where they were apparently throwing babies out of incubators, etc. The babies on bayonets in World War One. You could literally name
every conflict.
Well, a lot of them. Yeah, used especially by Britain and America, use these pretexts.
Yeah.
I mean, this event didn't in itself lead to a war.
No.
What it led to was the power of the monarch over totally crushing any alleged threat from English Catholics.
But if you think about it, though, Nick, if you think about the centuries that this celebration's gone on, Guy Fawkes was a pretty nondescript person.
Yeah. You know?
And they're utilising him for five centuries, six, you know, every year where there's an effigy burnt of him.
Yeah.
I mean, there's got to, in my opinion, it seems very dark and satanic, as in from why they're doing, having everybody doing this?
Well, we live in a culture which has to have an enemy. That's the kind of dreadful thing. That we can't be a culture in peace where we don't need an enemy. I mean, this country, we haven't naturally got any enemies. Nobody actually wants to attack us. No. We could just live in peace, you know. We could decimate the military budget, and we could spend it all on entertainment and, you know, music, education, instead of war, if we wanted to.
Health, even. How about health?
Health, health.
Some good health options.
Anyway, so something damaged about our culture that's... and in a way, it starts with the gunpowder plot, because it's an untruthful narrative that that creates a fictional enemy. And the enemy, the idea of an enemy who is bad simply because he's evil. And Guy Fawkes is portrayed as being linked up with the devil and with Catholics. Catholics and the devil get linked up together. So you've got this horrible kind of fictional idea of evil as somebody who's bad, wicked because he's bad. Why did he want a black parliament? Because he's wicked. I mean, there was no conceivable benefit to Catholics from blowing up Parliament. A load of Catholics in Parliament. There was no Catholic successor to King James if he had been blown up. You know, you'd just have got terrible repression and a far worse Protestant rule if it had succeeded. So there was no rational ground for doing this in that sense. So you imagine somebody who's bad just because they're evil. And that's why you want to burn them on a bonfire. You know?
Yeah, they're evil because we've told you they're evil. And all we want you to think about is that person. Don't look over here. Just think of that person.
Right. So the most depraved and feeble and inept politician can get power by this technique.
And Tony Blair just happens to be related to him. That's a coincidence, isn't it? I mean, Chris mentioned something earlier on. One of the stories you've told over the years, I don't know, it's sort of slipping into something else, is the about 7/7. I mean, that's what got me into your stuff, right?
Yeah,
The story of Canary Wharf, I found that part of the story fascinating.
Yeah, it's terrific, isn't it? Yeah.
It was on the news that someone had been shot in Canary Wharf, and then the story vanished, didn't it?
Yeah, but it's on the news all around the world. Loads of different reports around the world, and it was totally censored in this country, but they couldn't stop it being reported around the world. And that's 11 o'clock in the morning, bang bang, and then after that it's announced suicide bombers and so on, you know.
I always found that story, Nick, I think it was in your book, or I heard it, I think it was in your book, where that girl who was in the 7/7, she was in London, in central London, but she worked in Canary Wharf. Is that right? And then she went to Canary Wharf. They suspect she spoke to her parents and she said she was fine. And they said, you know, just come home. And she went to Canary Wharf and then no one ever saw her again.
But she intended to go, I'm not sure. But they alleged she was in Tavistock Square, didn't they?
Yeah, and she just vanished.
I got in a lot of trouble with that. I rang up the parents and got the story. And I was at my university then. And anyway, just about everyone got annoyed at me. But the point is,
get annoyed with you, or were they all right with you?
I don't think they did, no.
Yeah. They'd want the truth.
But I was accused of being very, you know, bad taste.
Disrespectful.
Disrespectful and everything, you know.
This is how they get away with things, because you can't ask questions about certain... Like I'll go back to 2020, 2021. Yeah. You can't... If somebody got tested positive, for argument's sake, on the useless PCR test, and then fell off a ladder and died, and then was... told they died of COVID. You can't ask that question to that family because you're being disrespectful.
Yeah.
Even though it's pretty common sense that they didn't die of COVID.
I would hazard
first place.
I would hazard a guess, going back to Guy Fawkes, if you question that narrative, you probably got ridiculed.
You probably got undrawn and quartered.
Depends if you're a Catholic. If you're a Catholic, you know, I think it was only Catholics, as far as I can tell. The only fact you did doubt the narrative,
dared doubt the narrative.
So it was connected with patriotism and the shocking way in which the British monarch, very shocking, declared they were head of the church, which was And the Catholics said that was totally incompatible with the Christian religion, you know. And so this was essentially a new religion in which the British monarch was head of the church. And I think the Guy Fawkes story, Gunpowder Plot, did a lot to ratify that by claiming the king has some divine guidance in this.
And if you think about what we're living through now with old Lord King Sausage Fingers himself, and his visit to Parliament the other day, not that I heard the speech, but now the process continues, doesn't it? A lot of that nonsense and all the regalia that goes on,
yeah,
well, still comes from those times.
He's still head of the church, isn't he?
Yeah, I presume so.
Yeah, I think he is.
Yeah, unless he's still a choir boy.
I think he tried not to be, but he didn't really have any option. Yeah. Anyway, I'll just give you another example of something, how the story was woven, if I may.
Yeah, go on.
There was a room that was hired near the House of Lords, where the Parliament was sitting. And it was alleged that the plotters all gathered there and started digging a hole, as if you could have rented accommodation, start digging a hole in the wall, a tunnel, and dig a tunnel under the House of Lords. And so there's a whole lot of story about how wicked these plotters were, because they were going underground and seeking to put barrels of explosive underneath Parliament.
Yeah, I remember that story from school. Isn't it?
Yeah, I do remember. Yeah.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. Now, the story developed that they eventually were surprised to find a huge wall that they couldn't get through. What a surprise. And then Guy Fawkes wandered around and discovered there was this enormous ground floor basement room underneath the House of Lords that they could use instead. And all the pictures of Guy Fawkes, there's some out-of-the-way little cavern dark room somewhere where he puts the gunpowder, you know. Well, actually, there isn't any such dark room. There's just this very large open place which was used for cooking meals and stuff. And then it was used for storing coal. And it has several doors to it. So there wasn't a key. It's not a question of having a key and being able to get his way in. Anyway, years later, when they were altering the building of the House of Lords, they discovered that there was no such tunnel at all. That never existed. So that was another thing that just wasn't there. It was just made up, you know.
That was like a blooming Roadrunner plot, didn't it?
Right. Well,
Warner Brothers.
They could just make that up.
Acme TNT.
Right. And then as regards what actually happened, there's one family, Mr. and Mrs. Winyard, and they were in charge of looking after that big ground floor cellar, okay? And they also rented out the little room that Guy Fawkes had, which was nearby. So those are obviously the people we'd like to hear their testimony, okay? Now, poor Mr. Winyard, he found it all just too much of a shock. And so after November the 5th, he dies of shock. Get that? Right?
Yeah. Sounds like JFK.
All right, this is the one guy who totally knew what happened and what was present in that big basement room. And he was in charge of what happened there. So he dies of shock right after the event. It seems to me it's only really in this 21st century or modern times we can appreciate how this plot is being constructed. That obviously he has to be removed because he knows too much, you know.
Maybe that were an early Divock shot.
Yeah, an early COVID shot. Yeah.
Early COVID shot, right. Also, then Mrs. Winyard, still around, she pipes up. She doesn't get tortured, right? So you get a testimony from her that she hasn't been tortured, which is quite interesting. And she says, oh, yeah, that chap, Guy Fawkes, his room, he was hiring his rent was paid up to date, and he was hiring builders to make some adjustments in that room. Well, if you're planning to blow the whole place up and you've got a whole lot of plotters secretly in that room, how likely is it that you'd hire some builders to come round, you know, and adjust the place? So we've got, you know, narratives that are not controlled, as it were, by the government. Perhaps they thought she was sufficiently unimportant. They could just let her talk. It's obviously not compatible with some generic plot. Yeah.
Well, it has all the hallmarks, doesn't it? Because people have gone missing, people have died suddenly. And a lot of these instances, these false flags, that seems to happen quite a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. The only people in this one, the only people who get terrified are the alleged plotters.
And there's generally several reasons why they do these false flags. Some of them, like Dunblane, for I'm not saying Dunblane didn't happen, I'm sure it did, but the reason it was allowed to happen brought in measures, i.e. gun controls and things like that, and probably other things that we don't even know about as well. And it covered up probably some paedophilia in Scotland and what have you. And likewise, say the Gulf War was a different war. So there's always different, slightly different reasons as to why they do these things. The whole terror thing from 2000 up to COVID was about keeping us terrified and willing to go and attack innocent people in the Middle East.
That I was in an IRA bombing, you know, Nick, in central London.
IRA bomb, all right.
Yeah. You know the one they set off in, was it, 91? I think it was the last IRA bomb.
Right.
And it was the largest one. But I just got thinking when you said about that, my hop and lie hop.
Yeah.
Because we got evacuated. I was in Liverpool Street working in a hotel. It was only like 90.
Right.
And we got evacuated. And a long story short, they put a bomb in a rubbish truck, I don't know if you remember. And this cop came down and they kept moving us further and further away. And it was quite casual. And because there were a lot of bomb scares in them days, if you remember, in London. Right. So we were kind of laughing and joking about it. But then the last time he came up, he said, "Everybody move." And the guy had gone white and he was terrified. So I always thought that he knew that that bomb was going to go off.
Wow.
And he moved us all into this park and then it went off. One guy got killed. I think it was a Sun reporter, I think.
Wow, yeah.
But he just, I always tell the stories. It was strange because he kept moving us, but then the last time he moved us, it was the same cop. He looked terrified. And it kind of ties in.
Sorry, he would have known what was happening. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, and then years later, I mean, Reece going back 10 years or so, so that were in the early 90s, I looked at some old newspapers. And one thing that happened after that was the City of Police cops were then allowed to carry firearms, sidearms, which they'd never done before. They were the only cops in England that could actually carry a pistol.
Right, the city.
So they brought something in on that, as well as terrorizing everyone, terrifying everybody. They brought something in on the back.
Right, so that could have been, in a way, the purpose of the event.
Well, I think a lot of things. I think
taking advantage
of it. I think it was damage as well. I think a lot of contracts dished out. I think it was in the anniversary of a year before when another bomb had gone off or something.
Right.
But it was definitely a myop.
Well, I think
or it's... a lie-hop, sorry.
Lie-hop.
Yeah, they let it happen. I know the IRA then used to call them in, didn't they, and warn them and stuff.
But I mean, many of the top IRA were working for MI5 stroke MI6 or intelligence services, military intelligence.
That's what David Shaley used to tell me. I never followed the Irish story, but David Shaley used to tell me just what you just said. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, from many different sources, that it was quite, even the two guys that became prominent politicians, I forgot the names now. I think they're still. They were known to be sort of either converse with intelligence sources and vice versa.
Looking at it now, that all you can only imagine the shenanigans going on in that kind of IRA bombing England story.
Yeah, you can.
Oh.
But like all these things, they always have the same hands in, don't they? There's always, like Nick's just been talking about, the intelligence services. They always say, "We knew about them, but we let them go."
It's an iron rule that the patsies, the people who get the blame, are always known beforehand to the intelligence services. I'll just give you a detail about that. When Guy Fawkes was asked to give a story, he told a story whereby he'd been at a wedding together with the King, King James. That was sort of not thought to be desirable. And so a later account, after being tortured a bit more, that was deleted, that he'd been at the same party with the King, you know.
Bin Laden with Bushes.
Bin Laden with the Bushes.
It was the Earl of Montgomery's wedding. And Guy Fawkes said how he was standing next to the King. Now, that's the kind of thing where it gives you a glimpse of a totally different narrative.
Yeah.
And we really wish somebody would tell us the story, what was going on there. And of course, they never will. That gets blotted out. There was another person who was close to the king, and did a lot of Percy, the other Percy, who did a lot of negotiation while he was still King of Scotland about whether he would be tolerant to Catholics when he came to England. So Percy had a secret correspondence with the king, supported by the Earl of Northumberland, then several times visited the king in Scotland. And the king then later denied he'd made promises. He made solemn promises about how well the Catholics would be treated. And Percy announced these, that this was, I think, a promise he'd got from King James of Scotland, okay? Now, later, Percy is then somehow rounded up as being one of the gunpowder plotters, and he gets shot dead. But the point is that the king and Percy got on well together over the years. Percy was given some honourable title, which enabled him to have horses wherever he was travelling in England. And that was declared by the king. The king gave him that. So this is somebody who has quite a good, or thinks he's got quite a close relation with the king. He presumably thinks he can trust the king in some degree. And then he finally finds himself, accused as one of the plotters, and he gets shot. So there's, as it were, a real identity behind these plotters who get demonized and treated as villains. There is a real identity which always gets wiped out. That is, as it were, the humanly interesting part that we wish we could have heard about.
Like all these things, I'll go back to Dunblane again. Even now, like JFK, the records, the evidence is locked up for 100 years. Why would they want to close the evidence down on these things when they have these reviews and things? Even when new evidence comes up, they won't have another review, like with Dr. David Kelly and people like that. Yeah. All of these instances that happen, the government covers them up because they're covering their own ass.
I think we need to encourage the students can learn about these things and discussing things. I was told by one history student that they could, you mentioned Pearl Harbor event, right? That brought America into the war. I was told they were allowed to discuss that and hear both sides of the argument. Now, presumably that's far enough away in history, but they are allowed to discuss it. I think it's very encouraging.
Yeah, I think there are certain subjects for some reason they're allowed to have a conversation about. That you could never discuss COVID at the minute in any school or college or university and have an open discussion about it. Just like you couldn't discuss what's going on in Israel at the moment and have an open discussion about it.
Or
Ukraine in this country.
Or
LGBT for that matter, or any of that type of stuff.
Or even the 9/11 minute. Who did 9/11? How was it constructed? There's no place in England where students were allowed to discuss that. When our 9/11 truth group used to exist, I remember going to Oxford University. We gave a presentation to Oxford students. That's the only one I ever heard of, and a few students turn up. Mainly, it's many non-students who turn up. Hang on, I think it was almost entirely non-students, yeah. I think students are given closed minds and they're kind of prevented from asking questions.
That's the reason why you're a student, because they want you to encapsulate your mind into the indoctrination of what they want to plonk inside your brain.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing more important in this 21st century than how the 9/11 event was constructed, who did it, and whoever did it is, in effect, in control of the world we live in now.
Even if you have an open discussion and never come to a finite answer, but everything's on the table to have that discussion about it, even if you still think it was an inside job, but it were bombs in the building, not free energy, not some kind of exotic technology, whatever. Any of these subjects we're discussing tonight, it's very difficult to take. Even World War II, for argument's sake, we've just had Remembrance Sunday and all the hassle that's just gone on with that. You can't question that day. You can't question the fact that the same finances that fund what we're living through now funded World War One.
No, you can't, right. I mean, the big demo on Saturday, that was a demonstration calling for a ceasefire. That was on Armistice Day. I can't think of any more appropriate than on Armistice Day, having a march to demand a ceasefire.
But it got turned into something else, didn't it? It got turned into the fact that you were disrespecting people that had died fighting for peace, apparently.
Well, I don't think we were, actually.
It was a disrespect, so you don't talk about it.
I was on the main march, and we weren't allowed anywhere near anywhere near Whitehall.
No.
I think that's a concocted story.
I agree with you. It is definitely.
I mean, the main march was totally peaceful. Police didn't need to do anything. Yeah. And there was hundreds of thousands.
You made a very good point a minute ago, Nick, that we glossed over when he said whoever did 9/11 has now ruined the world.
Yes.
It's true, isn't it? I never thought
of it. Well, in fairness, they were probably ruining the world before that, Chris.
Yeah. That was the ultimate stamp on it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
It's the hidden hand that kind of manifested itself then
and
created this tremendous event, so awesome that it's hardly possible to think about it.
A showstopper. A showstopper. And I think going back to what Nick said, that they now control the world, it's more likely that they controlled the world before, but the people that control the world changed the direction of what the world were going in. Just like COVID does.
The same people did COVID, the media and Ukraine war. They're in charge of all this stuff, so they're the ones orchestrating all of it.
Seems to me, yeah. There is some sort of hidden hand. I mean, most important thing, what can we do? Well, first thing we can do is have open discussions where you don't insult people you disagree with, and you don't storm out in a rage. You stay put, however stressful, and you talk about it. And you say, can we, you know, find out, can we come to agree on it or find out what happened or whatever? And get through the baloney you're given from the media.
The issue we've got, Nick, right, is that a lot of the people that you're having a discussion with are trapped in that one-dimensional way of thinking that you can't break that. The only way that people will break that is by accepting that the whole life has possibly been a lie. and that's a massive jump for someone who's in that prism.
It's it. Yeah, I agree with you. But you can. It's a good start. If you look at something happened 400 years ago where you can keep relatively calm and you see how they actually did this and got the knack. I mean, state fabrication is a threefold process, right? And you have the knack. There's the perpetrators who remain hidden. There's the fall guys who get the blame. You're never quite sure who they thought they were working for, but they take it in, they get the blame. And thirdly, there's the innocent third party. The patsies who get who do the event get knocked off, or else if it's real terror, there's some people who get killed.
Yeah.
And then you get, thirdly, you get where the blame is projected.
Yes.
So the skill, it's fairly easy to create a terror event, but the skill lies in projecting the blame onto an innocent third party. Yeah. And the blame went as far as Rome even the Pope. The Pope had strongly given out warnings when they heard rumours of anything like this going to happen in England. He said, don't try any sort of violence, however bad your situation is. Just don't try any violence. It won't work. He specifically put out those warnings. But nonetheless, once this thing had been projected, this story, the Pope and Rome got, as it were, blamed.
By the way, we're not. I don't think Nick's sticking up for Catholicism, if that's the word, Catholicism, because. I mean, they've had their past dark days, haven't they? The Spanish Inquisitions and stuff like that. But that's where all this stuff gets mixed up. Where again, going what's happening at the moment in Israel, nobody's asking the question as to how. That's it. If these people were terrorists or Operation Gladio, whatever they were, how they actually managed to get across the border. That's guarded. It's the most high tech border probably in the world.
Yeah,
and why was the veil lifted? A bit similar, like Pearl Harbor. Yeah. Why were they allowed to just step over and go in there and do what they wanted to do for 4 or 5 hours?
Yeah, and the story's put out with terrific rage and hate. We've got to start bombing the hell out of these people. So terrific rage and hate is generated, which tends to block out the discussion. And once in this case, the Israeli side, once that hits the newspaper headlines, the journalists have to express a view on the matter.
Yeah.
You can't remain neutral when such a dire thing is said. And then a week later, can you admit, oh, sorry, we were totally wrong there. Oh, no, we've got it all wrong. Here's the real story. Well, you can't really. The journalists can't really go back and say, sorry, we just got that just so wrong.
Well, I mean, in fairness, these embedded journalists, they're not even journalists, are they, really now? And the people like, say, Mariana Spring and people like that, they're not journalists. They're just attack hounds, aren't they?
Propaganda machines, aren't they?
Yeah, they're just attack hounds. Yeah. They're not.
I mean,
where are the journalists now, Nick?
Well, where are the newspapers by people living in this country?
Yeah,
you know, we're losing our sovereignty, and that is very, very drastically expressed by not having media that are independently controlled by people living in this country.
Yeah,
you know, that is the terrible thing. I mean, I don't recommend reading newspapers. I recommend getting your sources on the web, if you can, but because of what you just said.
Library sources and on the web, because the daily shite that is pumped out into people's brains on radio, TV, it's all the same message. So all this. It's a variation of the same message.
Yeah, I'm really old. I can remember when newspapers had different views, you know.
Yeah.
And say, oh, he's left wing, oh, he's right wing, oh, he's liberal.
And I'm sure that was controlled to a certain extent. However, at least you did have a differing view.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, right.
Even up to the 80s, you had a differing view. It was only when Blair came to power in this country, not necessarily America, certainly in this country, that Blair was just another reinvention of the same thing that came before.
Yeah, right. Well, I recommend the Light newspaper. You get the Light newspaper and have a group, form a group, give out copies of the Light newspaper in your group, and that helps to sort of hold things together a bit.
But I think it's a free
newspaper. But yeah,
talk to him, Nick.
We're doing a podcast with Darren. Yeah, right. From the Light. And we're going to do one probably in the new year when things quieten down for him. But these false flag, do you know now, and I'm sure you can, you're more experienced than me and Chris are, but that these are so bleeding obvious. The lies are getting so obvious. And the number of lies that they're utilising now, the new numbers increasing. Because, as we know, the more you lie, the more they've got to keep lying to feed.
If you looked at the propaganda machine after whatever happened in Israel, the emotional propaganda machine, which was immediately they'd kidnapped a girl, a young lass, they paraded in a naked around the town or whatever. They beheaded babies. They were all emotional triggers, weren't they?
Yeah. Well, it's so horrific. I can hardly bear to even think about it.
No, I don't look at it. Because you don't know what's true and what isn't, to be honest. But I mean is the emotional propaganda was very obvious, I thought.
Yeah, but the story does come out later. Later on, you can find out what's true when it's passed out of the media headlines. Mm. But we come back to this unique, amazing British art, State Fabric of Terror. It spans 2004 to 2017. We get the Madrid bombing, Madrid station 2004. That's before the London bombing 2005. Then you get a terrific sequence all around Europe, and it climaxes and ends in 2017 with the Manchester Arena event and also a Westminster Bridge event. And so I would say ever since 2012, these events have not been real deaths. They've been accident damage and fake blood. The culmination...
Do you know what, right? Whether these are accident damage or real people being damaged, right?
Yeah.
If it's backed by the same people, it makes no difference, does it? Apart from people are alive, gladly, yeah? Because the lie's still the same, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
The intent is to terrorize people, regardless. I remember the Westminster one where the people were on the London Eye and they had all the mobile phones taken off them in case they'd taken pictures of what had gone on.
That's right. London Eye. Your London Eye is just for people. This is right next to the Westminster Bridge. So they would have had a good view. And whatever happens, or rather didn't happen. And they were, first of all, kept waiting for several hours in that bloody...
Yeah, they were left up there, weren't they? Yeah.
So make them scared. All the police were out. And then they got allowed out after a terrific wait by removing all their phones. So that would have scared them enough to keep their mouths shut.
And the CCTV was turned off 6 months before. Because apparently it was too expensive for Westminster.
Westminster.
Richest district in London, probably.
Yeah. That was a whole lot of...
You could write these events like that down. CCTV's turned off.
Yeah.
There's no photographic evidence. They locked
And they had professional cameras have been at globalist meetings, professional photographers.
Yeah.
Were known for having been at globalist meetings or photographed other big events, just happened to be there,
Because the CCTV cameras can get you when you go through a red light, but they never get anybody when it's meant to happen. Nobody ever gets sacked, though, for having a CCTV camera.
I had a photo of me sent to me in my car for parking and getting some headache tablets in London.
Yeah.
So they can send me that photo, but they can't get a picture of it. And also, you had the hero as well. Do you remember that hero politician that revived someone or something? Do you remember?
Oh, God, yeah. What's his name? He's still on...
They got plenty of photos of him, didn't they?
Yeah, a lot of him today on the radio. A Tory MP. What's his name?
I can't remember. I can't remember which guy it was.
Yeah, he comes out. This guy's literally been stabbed in the chest, a policeman lying down. And this guy comes and gives him this resuscitation, which you mustn't do if somebody's stabbed in the chest.
I'm sure he knew what he was doing, Nick. He's a politician, they know what they're doing.
Oh, right. Actually, there's a good twist to that story. If you remember, there's a red helicopter came and landed in the grass in front of the House of Parliament.
Yeah.
I know
what you're going to say, in it. I know this one.
It had Masonic thing. It was a Masonic signs on it. It said they were celebrating the 400th anniversary. You see?
The Masons of London, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah, in 1617, you see. So they come and they come and land there, and it's got something on the side saying emergency risk or something.
Yeah.
They don't do very much.
I remember that big red helicopter, and they were stood outside it like for a photo op, I remember.
Yeah. Anyway, then... Get this, they have an inquiry into that Westminster event, which I actually went to, and that has the story that two medics leap out of that helicopter and trot over to this guy who's been knifed, who's lying on the ground, and they cut open a bit of his chest, put a hand in, and squeeze his heart to try and resuscitate it. Now, you might not believe that. It's a bit like some Aztec sacrifice ritual, you know.
Yeah, I'm a bit flabbergasted there. Does that really happen?
Did he survive, Nick, that guy? Did they put him in a Masonic helicopter and take him away?
I think he did, yeah, something like that. Did he survive? The point is that he never got stabbed. He disappears, that's the thing.
I thought you were going to say they put him in the helicopter and then...
People are rewarded for disappearing. You get a lot of money and exciting new life.
Well, I mean, even some of these people, even if they don't want an exciting new life or a load of money, some of people are idealists. They've got an ideology. And the part of the plan, they don't need to be paid for it. At the end of the day, if you're in special ops or whatever, that's your role, isn't it? That's what you've been trained to do. Or if you've been mind controlled to do these things, that's what you've been mind controlled to do. You might not even be aware that you're doing it.
I kind of miss those pre-COVID fake terror events, because some of them were mildly injured. I mean, do you remember the Rigby one with those guys?
Of course.
That was insane, wasn't it?
Insane, yeah, totally insane, yeah.
Again, I don't know if anyone died. I don't believe he did.
I wrote my book. I thought he was a real character. I treated him, but then I talked about with Chris Spivey, this guy who was blogging a lot about it. In fact, he got a High Court injunction to shut up. He told me he was very doubtful, and I then tried to check his existence. He was supposed to be in a drum, he's in Afghanistan, he was here, he was there, but you couldn't trace him anywhere, and the regiment he was in had been folded up a year or two back, so there's no way of verifying his existence. So he might not have been a real character at all, but he had a tremendous effect, emotional effect on people of England.
Well, I mean, if you think now, right, what we're seeing with AI now, if they had all this stuff 10, 15 years ago, where they could make, I mean, I saw a picture, was in the papers the other day. People send, as you probably get email stuff, and I've been looking at this for a few years, NVIDIA, which is a software company. They make, they've been doing humans, that faces that look like somebody, but they don't exist. They're just manufactured by AI, if you like.
Yeah, we're suddenly getting that big time, aren't we?
Yeah. And suddenly we are getting all this alternate reality. And imagine if that were put into the ether 10 to 15 years ago with these
I'm not sure they couldn't do it that well. For example, if you remember the Islamic terrorist in Lee Rigby, he had a sort of axe, didn't he? Or was it?
That's what made it fantastical, where he was. Yeah. He was there with all the blood on him and stuff.
He was waving the axe about. Yeah. And I don't know if you noticed, but the red on the axe would sometimes come off and lag behind.
It looked like it had been CGI'd on.
This is what I'm trying to say, Chris. If the AI was there like that then, who knows anyway? Who knows?
Also, like you said before, where are those guys? Where are them two fellas? You know, we want to see them interviewed.
Presumably they're in jail, but they might be sent back to Africa. I mean, you won't ever hear what happened to them.
This is one of the main things, and you never see them again. Like I said, they're either dead or they're in prison. But you surely you'd love to see an interview with these people and get to the back of why they're operating and doing this stuff.
Waste a lot of time trying to do that. I remember the Joe Cox story. There was this totally harmless, innocent fella who was accused of having murdered her. What was his name?
I forget what he was called now.
He was a very, very harmless fella.
Richard did a lot of work on
Richard.
Richard managed to get a letter from him from jail. We spent a lot of time trying to find where he was or could we contact him. You just can't. And they're hidden away and they lose their identity. They become unpersons. You know?
And he got dragged straight to London, didn't he, for his trial, which was unusual.
They have these kangaroo courts.
Dragged straight to London, yeah. Mm. Well, hang on. They had a week-long court hearing. The guy obviously wasn't... I was there at the hearing. I just forgot his name.
Free Tommy.
Tommy Mayer. Well done.
Tommy Mayer. Yeah.
Well done. So you never find what's happened to him in the end, and the relatives are too much intimidated, told to shut up, it's very frustrating. I'll give you another example: the Skripals. That was another massive government hoax. That was after 2017. We talked about it's always let's hate Muslims. Yeah. Right from all this century up 2017, starting with 9/11, it was let's hate Muslims, the wicked Muslims, and all the terrific plots constructed blame the Muslims. Okay.
Yeah.
And suddenly, you know, just as if by magic, Islamic terror ends and you get suddenly the big bad Russians. Skripal is extremely unlikely. He and his daughter fall down on a park bench with something called Novichok, just at the end of a big army training thing on Salisbury Plain about biological warfare, you know.
I'm sure there's a few characters out of the COVID shenanigans that Chris Whitty was part of that with Porton Down.
Porton Down, just a few miles away.
Yeah, Chris Whitty was part of the investigation into that.
He was, yeah. Anyway, they inconveniently, they have to just disappear. No one can ever see them again. They can't go back to Russia. And basically, if you believe they're still alive, nobody can even find out if they're still alive, they're given new identities.
Yeah.
And there's a big, actually, theoretically, ongoing inquiry.
I think that's the prime example of how they disappear people. Because there's no reports of them dying. There's no reports of them going back to Russia.
No, exactly. Yulia, whose young life is sort of blotted out with this dastardly plot, she just phoned up a cousin of hers in Moscow, says, oh, yeah, we're okay. We're getting better. You know, hope to see you soon. And she then vanishes. And they're kept in a kind of bubble by British security and you just don't know where they are. And it's quite frustrating and distressing.
These situations that we talk about here, and you've been talking about for a long time, they just keep going on and on and on, don't they? It's not a never ending.
They don't end. It won't end as long as the British people put up with it. As long as British people support, let me say, people of England, every time you believe a state fabricated terror narrative, your life will get worse. That's what it means. It is a form of theatre straight from hell to create distrust, destroy your belief and trust in your fellow men, it's up to us to experience rage and say we will not put up with this. This is a total crap narrative, and how dare you?
The issue is we're a fringe in comparison to. This is where I looked at it this week, only this week, really.
Right.
The people who were anti-lockdowns in 2020, and anti-vaccination when they were in the protests, are now pro-Islet real, a lot of them, some of them, so should I say.
Yeah.
And some of them, some people that were pro-lockdown, pro-vaccination, are now pro-Palestine. This is the divide and conquer we're up against.
It's very agonizing because you can lose some of your best friends this, you're not careful, You suddenly find you're on the wrong side of a divide.
Yeah, and so we are always on the wrong side of the divide, though, Nick, simply because we're willing to put everything on the table and accept that the British government, let alone all the other governments, are willing to kill their own people and torture their own people and traumatize their own people. We're willing to put that on the table and say we could be being had, right?
I'll just point out, this is in the film V for Vendetta, which was just done around the time to do with the London bombing. I think it was just done just before the London bombing, wasn't it?
I think it was 2005 that came out, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2005. But it involved a whole lot of things.
The mask was the Guy Fawkes mask, wasn't it?
That mulls over the question, would the government kill its own citizen? And that has a underground train loaded up with explosives going to... So it's deeply connected.
Yeah. Deeply symbolic, in it, Guy Fawkes.
Yeah.
And the answer to that is, well, the British government have killed their own people for centuries.
People
who didn't agree with them. If you didn't jump out of a trench and run into machine gun bullets, you were called a coward and shot back at Ed or shot at dawn. Yeah. By your own side.
But
you were shot by your own side fighting for freedom. How's that work? But
to truly go over the fence for it, and then you've got to accept that the government either want you dead or really sick.
Yeah.
And they're definitely not on your side.
But we need some sort of truth movement or a ministry of peace which would explain why the war is not necessary. And I always refer to that Star Wars film, The Phantom Menace. That's an important concept to get across to people.
Yeah.
I think that's the first of the franchise. And it's how a mocked-up enemy is mocked up in order to the evil Sith Lord destroys democracy, gets total autocratic powers, what he wants to do, and he does it by a phantom menace story.
But look, he says he'll give the power back as well. Once we've solved the problem, we'll give the power back. Do you remember, Nick, as well, in that film? I remember I talked about this with one of our first podcasts.
We're going into Chris World now.
Where they're clapping when he gets voted in, who ends up being the Emperor. They're clapping.
Oh, yeah, right. Palpatine,
Palpatine. And what's her name? Natalie Portman says, We're clapping the destruction of democracy or something.
Yeah.
And I pointed it out when we were clapping outside for the nurses, not me personally, but, it was the same thing, wasn't it? We're clapping his own destruction of any form of democracy that was left.
She gets some really good lines in that film. Mm.
Yeah. He's telling you a lot, that film, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Well, I think the first
three, which he makes later on,
more political, got more stuff in.
Much deeper. And
they got flack for that, for not being kid films. But
And they describe how the enemy image is mocked up, which is so important for us to appreciate. And by the way, they were made just over the years of 9/11, just when it was actually happening in real time. Those first three were made about the way you end up with the real baddie, Darth Vader,
Yeah, I think the first one was 1999, yeah, and then second one was the Clone Wars, wasn't it?
I think so. Yeah.
Well, I mean, as we know, Hollywood is generally again funded by the same war machine apparatus that is funding everything else that's going on at this moment in time. So it's no wonder that they're telling us what they're doing. It seems to be that there's some kind of they've got to admit what they're doing, and we've got to be crafty enough to work it out before it happens. It seems to be like that, some sort of revelation.
That's what they always say. They always say that they're supposed to kind of show in some way before it happens.
Like a show and tell type thing. But yeah. So Nick, we're coming to the end now. Just done an hour a bit in a blink. Where can people buy your books?
It's on Amazon. This one, Bard of the Gunpowder Plot, is on Amazon. Yeah, do me a favour, leave a review, you know.
Yeah.
I try to weave together the two different plots. This one we just talked about today, which is, they're both about theatre in a way. This is a theatrical image, a sort of nightmare image given to British people. It's an illusory one, something that didn't actually, and it conditioned games a true duality. That's what the public editorial does. It gives you a terrific duality of good guys and bad guys that any, even the worst kind of politician can use. So it sets up that duality with a fake image of evil. See if you think that's related to the great Shakespeare plays emerging at the end of the Tudor dynasty. That's just before the time where we've been looking at. And you get people very close to monarchy, British monarchy, creating these tremendous masterpieces. And for whatever reason, which we haven't gone into, that their real name or names couldn't be given. And the whole credit was given to somebody who couldn't read or write, this guy in Stratford.
But your book's basically telling both of those stories, Nick. Is that
exactly?
Is that
yeah. Right, okay. I weave the two together. Yeah.
All right. Right. I've got three of your books. I haven't got that one.
Ah.
I've got your Paul McCartney one, How Britain Started Both World Wars, and I've got your 7/7 one as well.
Oh, right.
And I bought them before I even knew you. So.
Oh, right. I'm very honoured. Wow.
Yeah. So, okay then. Well, thanks once again, Nick. Thanks for your hard work over the years.
Cheers, Nick.
And constant
Well, a bit of pleasure, writing. Dominic. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, a bit of pleasure.
And we'll have to meet up again in a few months and have another chinwag, maybe about some other...
do the Shakespeare bit.
You do the Shakespeare
something like
bit,
that.
Maybe.
Something like that, yeah.
A bit different,
yeah. I think we should do that.
Perhaps in the spring, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, nice. We'll do the Shakespeare bit.
Yeah, okay.
If you're going to join us for hour two, we'd like to see you over the fence. If not, we will see you next time. But...